Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nida Daf Samach Aleph. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins at the very top of Daf Samach Aleph, where you will find the Mishnah. The topic heading, in other words, the nosei that you see in the margin of the Gemara, which introduces the topic, is Gimel Noshim, three women, b'mita, in a bed, b'mita achas, v'nimseis dam tachas achas mehem, and a stain of blood is found on this bed that was being used by three people. Our interest is, of course, in establishing which one of the women are going to be considered Tameos. The Mishnah, Shalosh Noshim Shoyu Yeshenus B'mito Achas, three women who were sleeping in one bed, V'nimtza Dam. So now we break down the Mishnah using numbers, different possibilities of where the blood was found. Tachas V'emtzois, if it was found under the middle woman, in other words, a stain on the bed over this spot, or under the spot that the middle woman was sleeping, kulan tameos, all three women are considered tameos. The doubt being that maybe it came from the woman herself that's on top of the blood, or maybe in the course of their movement in sleep, it came from one of the neighboring women. And since they're three, and it's found under the middle one, so all are relatively close to that blood. Another case, tachas ha-pnimis. The term pnimis means the innermost woman, which in this case we'll say is a reference to a bed positioned next to a wall, where the woman closest to the wall is considered the innermost woman. So the ruling will be shtayim ha-pnimis tameos, the two inner women, the middle one and the one next to the wall will be tameos, v'achitzona tahora, the outermost woman, tahora. A third case, tachas hachitzona, if the blood is found under the outermost woman. So we say, shtayim hachitzonis tameos, vapnimis tahora. The two outer women will be tameos, the middle one and the outermost woman, as opposed to the inner woman who will be tahora. Amosai, when do we have this breakdown? Bizman she'ovru derech marglos amita. The three women got onto the bed from the foot of the bed. In other words, they didn't all go over the same spot and roll, so to speak, toward the wall, but rather, each one got onto the bed more or less over at the end of the bed at a position representing where they would end up sleeping. Avalim avru derech aleha, if all of the women got onto the bed over the same spot, then kulon tameos. In the event that the blood was found on the outer edge of the bed, so they would all be tameos, because we would say they all got onto the bed over the same spot. The Rashi says, Aval avru shloshtem derech oleha, shehen dorsos ve'ovros al hachitzona. They all got onto the bed over the outer part, over the outer edge of the bed. Kulon tameos, vafilu pnimis. They would all be tameos, even the innermost woman. The shemo kisha avra pnimis derech shom nafal mimeno, because as the one, the lady who was eventually the innermost lady, but she got onto the bed over there, and as she was getting onto the bed, so the blood may have dripped forth from her. The Mishnah continues. Botko achas mehen v'nimtseis tahora. In the event that we have this found blood on the bed, if one of the women checks herself using the standard white checking cloth, it's inserted into that area of the body, and she finds it to be clean, he tahora ushtayim tameos. So she cleanses herself or frees herself from suspicion, and then therefore she's considered the tahora, the pure one, and the others are still in doubt, and hence they're labeled tameos. That's what the Mishnah means. It hitoru shtayim tameos, bodku shtayim umotzu toros. If two of the women checked themselves out and found themselves to be toros, hein toros ushlishis tameo, then they are considered toros. They've cleared themselves of the doubt, and the third woman who didn't check herself is the tameo one. However, shloshtan umotzu tahoros. If all three women checked themselves and found themselves to be tahoros, and on the other hand, yet we see blood over there, kulon tameos. They're all going to be considered tameos. Lema hadover domeh. To what can this be compared? Legal tomei shinis arev ben shnei galim tahorim. Egal is a heap of whatever, a heap of stones, a heap of dirt, and there was a piece of corpse flesh, a kazayas, an olive quantity of corpse flesh, in one of the piles. Ubodak achas mehen umotzoi tohor. One pile was checked and no corpse flesh was found. So we say that hu tohor shnayim tameim. The one that was checked and found to be free of corpse flesh is tohor, and the other two are considered tomei, considered in the state of doubt and hence generating tuma. Shnayim umotzu tohorin. Two of the three piles were checked out and found to be free of any corpse material, so they ahim tohor ushlishi tomei, and the third heap that was not checked will still be considered tomei. Shloshdan umotzoi tohorin, if all three were checked and found to be corpse free, kulon tomein divrei Rabbi Meir, they're all considered tomei, and that's what Rabbi Meir's opinion is. She Rabbi Meir omer kol dover shu becheskas tuma. Anything that has a status of tuma has a is supposed as being tamei. La'olam hu betumasai. It is considered that way. Ad shivada loch tuma hechon hi. Until you can establish where the tuma went, and if you can't establish where the tuma went, so all suspected areas will be considered under suspicion, and in this case tamei. V'chachomim oimrim. Regarding the heap, the Chacham is saying this last example with the three heaps under which or in which there was one in which one of them there was a kezias of basar mace. They say bodek ad shemagiyalo sela oy lebasula, that all you're expected to do is check out thoroughly until you get to virgin soil, or until you get to sela is bedrock. Basula would be virgin soil, where there's, you can rest assured there's nothing under that. The Gemara asks, "My Shno Reisha, what is different about the Mishnah on Daf Samach Amud Beis, the Lo Maflig? The Mishnah there spoke also about three women on a bed, and there the Mishnah said all of the women are tameos, making no distinctions. There the Mishnah said if blood is found under one of them, they're all tameos. And no distinction there on Daf Samach Amud Beis was made between a middle woman or under an outermost or innermost woman. Umayishna Seifa, namely our Mishnah. What's different regarding our Mishnah, the latter Mishnah here, we're on Daf Samach Aleph, de Kol Maflig, that makes a distinction. Omar Rebbe Ami, Rebbe Mishu Lavois, Rebbe Ami says that why the Mishnah on Daf the Reisha, which made no distinction, is because it was a narrow bed, or it was a circumstance where the three women were attached to one another. Mishulavos Rashi says, Techufos udubukos yachad. They were all tightly pressed against one another. Because of that, even if it was found under the innermost woman, but since the proximity of the outermost woman in that case to the blood was very, very close, therefore she too falls under suspicion. Bodko achas v'chulei. The Gemara here asks, why was it necessary in the Mishnah to make reference to an analogy? You'll notice to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text, we have an arrow that appears. The Gemara asks, Lomale lemisni lemaze doime. This arrow can be aligned with the arrow you find further up on the page, where the dashed underlined expression Loma lema hadover doime appears. Why was it necessary for the Mishnah to make a comparison? The Gemara explains, Hochi karma lehu Rabbi Meir l'Rabbonan. Really, it was part of Rabbi Meir's discussion with the Rabbonan that phrase entered, and the Gemara here reveals how the argument unfolded. Mai shna bedam delo pligisu. What is different about the case of the blood where you do not disagree? In other words, where we saw the three women who had checked themselves and found themselves to be tahoros, we said they were all tameos, and there was no argument about that. Maishma begal de pligisu. But in the case of the three piles, you argue with me. We saw in the Mishnah, Rabbi Meir says that the tumah label will remain until you have a definitive report on where the tumah went. And the Chachamim say, no, the tumah label will not remain. If we look at Rashi, Dibur HaMasril, Mai shna bedam delo pligisu, the moidim atem li decho, the nimtza shlosh tantoros, you the Rabbonan agree with me, Rabbi Meir, that where all three women, after checking themselves, were found to be tahoros kulan tameos, that they are all labeled as tamei, as opposed to the case of the gal, where all three were checked and found to be without corpse. And in such a case, you didn't say that they would all be tamei, as you did say by the case of the women. The Gemara goes on, Ve'rabonon, what's their response? What's the basis of their distinction? Bishlamo hasam, I understand in the case of the heap involving the with the corpse flesh in it, Emo oirev not law, I can explain the absence of the corpse flesh, and hence come to the conclusion that they are all tohor, because we can easily say that an oirev, a type of carnivorous bird, came and took it away. Elahacha, in the case of the blood found on the bed, Haidamehechasa, where else could it have come from other than from one of these women? So in the case of the heaps, heaps of dirt with the corpse flesh there, the absence of the meat can be explained away. Here in the case of the blood, the presence of the blood cannot be explained away. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice a series of triangles, and each triangle is found at the beginning of a new Tanaic source. In our margin under our Nosei Mivneh heading, you'll notice a triangle is featured, and we've written under our Nosei Mivneh heading, Maisim Shel Bedika V'Chipus Achar Tuma, cases where there is a checking out after checking out for something that would be responsible for tuma, velo matzuha, and they didn't find what they were looking for. The Gemara, Tanya, Omar Rebbe Meir, Maisa b'shikmo shel Kfar Saba. Shikmo is a type of tree. It was a tree in this place called Kfar Saba. Shehoyu machzikin bo tuma. It was known that it was assumed that there was tumah in the tree. Ubodku v'lo matzu, and they checked the tree out and they didn't find any tumah there. Liyomim, some time went by. Noshva b'ruach v'krosoi, a wind blew and uprooted the tree. V'nimtza gulgolus shalmeis tchuva loy b'koro, and they found a skull of a dead person wedged into its roots. The ikoro is its base or its roots or its bottom. As a result of the uprooting of the tree, the source of the tumor was discovered. Omru lo, they said to Rabbi Meir, who was using this as an argument to advance his position that we just learned before, that there is the status of tumah shall remain until you can find where it went. Here, in other words, a checking that produced no results does not change the status as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned. And here, he tried to prove it. Here, they checked, found no results, and yet the tumah was still there. Omru lo, so the Rabbanan said back, Misham raya, emar lo bodku kol tzorcho. All we can say is that they didn't check enough. The Gemara goes on with another story like this. Tanya Omer Rabbi Yossi Maisa B'mora Shel Shichin. It was an incident involving the a cave in the place called Shichin Shoyu Machzikin Bot Tuma. There was an assumption of Tuma being there. Botku Achigil Kaka Shoyu So Chaloka Kitzpor, and they checked the cave until they got to dirt, or they got to floor material that was as smooth as a nail. Tzipor is a fingernail. In other words, very smooth soil that you can assume was never moved from its place. Nothing was ever planted there. V'lo motso, and they had not found the tumah. L'yomim nichnesu bo poyalim mipnei hagashomim. On one occasion, workers went in there to seek refuge from the rain. V'nitzu b'kar musehem, and they wedged their shovels into the floor. U'motsu machteshes m'leo atzamos, and they found a stash of bones. Omru lo. So, before actually going on, we should say that Rabbi Yossi is presenting this to show the position of Rabbi Meir, that even though checking was done and no results were found, nevertheless, the tumah is still there. And the Rabbonin respond by saying, Misham Raya, from there you are trying to bring a proof. Emar lo bodku kol tzorcho. Like we saw in the previous source, maybe they didn't check enough. Tanya, Abba Sholom, Ermaisa Besela Beschoron, Shemachzikin Bot Tumo. There was a rock in Beschoron that they had assumed had a tumah associated with it. The Chachomim couldn't check it out. It was very large, or it would have been too great a task in checking. There was a sage there, and his name was Rabbi Shua ben Chananya. Omar Lohen, and he told them, Havili Sadinim. Bring me some sheets or some sheets of material. Havilo Sadinim, Vishor on Vimayim, they brought him these sheets, and they soaked the sheets in water. Uparson Alehem, and they took these sheets and spread them over the sela, this rocky, hard earth area in Beis Choron. So that, as we saw in the incident, it was Meruba, was a lot of area to check, and hence they didn't bother checking. He did a quick type check, a massive checking, by taking these sheets and saturated with water, spreading them over this sela soil. Mokom taro yovesh, mokom tumolach. If the ground is very compacted, so it won't absorb any of the water from the sheets, and very hard compacted ground, you can assume nothing is buried there. However, loose soil is such that it will absorb the water, so that is a place that is a suspect of having been moved for burial purposes. So the Brisa declares that the Mokom Tara, place that there is no suspicion of Tuma, remained dry. Mokom Tuma, place where there would be, which was suspect of something being buried there, loose earth, was wet. Ubotku, they checked Umotsu Bor Godo Molo Yatsomos, and they found a pit full of bones. Tona Hu Habor Shemile Yishmuel ben Nesanyo Chalolim. That was a historical pit. It was a pit that was filled by there was a murderous individual by the name of Yishmuel ben Nesanyo, who appears at the, we'll say historically, at the time of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. After the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there was by the Babylonians, there had been appointed a leader of the remnant Jewish people called, his name was Gedaliah, and he was eventually murdered by this fellow, Yishmael, who also murdered a number of people that were with Gedaliah, and the pit was filled with the corpses. Dechtiv, Abor Shehishlich Shom Yishmael is Kop Pigri Anoshim, Asher Hiko Biad Gedaliah. And you see this pasuk making reference to that pit, and the Brisa had reported to us that that pit was the pit that was found many years later during the time of Abba Shaul, during the Tanaic period, was in fact that pit that was originally used to bury these murdered victims. The Gemara now asks about this particular pasuk. It says that the pit was used to that Yishmael threw all of the corpses. Which corpses? The pasuk itself says the corpses that were killed by Gedaliah. That's what Asher Hiko Biad Gedaliah. Now the Gemara asks, V'chi Gedaliah Hargon? Did Gedaliah kill them? V'halo Yishmael Hargon? As we said before, this individual is a murderous character, and he, Yishmael, killed them. So why does the pasuk convey the feeling or the message that Gedaliah killed them? So the Gemara answers, Elamitov Shoyaloi Lochush La'atzas Yochanan ben Kerach V'lochosh. Gedaliah had been informed by a gentleman called Yochanan ben Kerach that Yishmael was plotting against him. Gedaliah, when he heard this report, he belittled the report and said, "Oh, like he says, you're lying. Nothing's going to happen." He should have taken it into consideration, and he didn't. V'lo chosh, and he didn't arouse any suspicion in him, thereby lowering the guard, so to speak, and thereby enabling Yishmael to comfortably execute Gedaliah and the men with him. So, because of Gedaliah's innocence, so to speak, or his lack of suspicion, he actually endangered not only himself but the men with him, and they were killed. So Ma'alov Hakosuv Kiimu Hargan, the Torah, the scripture takes Gedaliah to task on that and considers it as if he, Gedaliah, killed them. In other words, the victim is, as far as the pasuk is concerned, portrayed as the perpetrator. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading that we call Kabbalas Lashon Hara Asura. Accepting evil speech, maligning speech, is something the Torah forbids. Avol Mechushle Miboy. But even though one is not allowed to accept with full believability that which is being said that is of a maligning nature, but one should entertain the possibility of its veracity. Omar Rava, Hai Lishna Bisha. Lishna Bisha is Loshon Hora, maligning or evil speech. Hafapi Delikbui Lo Miboya. Even though to accept it, you're not allowed to accept it as being fact. Mechash Le Miboya. But suspecting it, you should. Hano, and now a story to illustrate that. Hanohu b'nei Galila, v'nofak alayu kola. There were some people from the Galil region concerning which word went out, the kotel nafsha, that they were murderers, that they killed someone. Also l'kamei Rabbi Tarfon. These people who were under suspicion as being murderers, they came to Rabbi Tarfon, omrulei lit marinon mor. Please hide us. Omar Lahu, Rabbi Tarfon said, Hechi Navid, what am I to do? E lo at merin chu, if I don't hide you, chazu yasaychu, so you will be found and pay the price. At merin chu, if I hide you, haom rabbonon, but it has been said, hai lishna bisha. We just saw this comment before that loshen hara, afal gav likbuli lo miboya, even though one is not to accept it, mechash le miboya, one should suspect its veracity. And as such, maybe you did kill someone, and therefore I'm not allowed to save you. Zilu atun tamru nafshecha, so you go and hide yourselves. The Gemara continues with an incident of going back to the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, and the connection between this incident and the Gemara we just learned is the subject of discussion in the Mefarshim. There's a Tosfos here that makes reference to the connection, but it's not a very clear statement in the Tosfos. The Mefarshim deal with the Tosfos, and we recommend looking at the Sefer Oruch Laner for further explanation of what we're about to learn. But on a very superficial level, just like we have been learning about the dinim of Lashon Hara and accepting that which you hear from others, here we have a story involving Moshe Rabbeinu and Oig Melech HaBoshan. When Moshe Rabbeinu was leading Klal Yisrael in the Midbar, and it came to a point in time when they had to battle Oig Melech HaBoshan, it seems that Moshe Rabbeinu was fear-struck, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu says, "Don't worry." Michti, Sichon v'Oig achi havu. These are two kings, Sichon, Melech HaEmori, and Oig Melech HaBoshan. Sichon was the king of the Emori, who the Jewish people also warred against and defeated. And Og, they were brothers. Yom Amar, it has been taught, Sichon v'Og b'nei Achya ben Sham Chazoi havu. These two people, Sichon Og, were the sons of Achya ben Sham Chazoi. Rashi gives a little more background to it, but for our purposes, we go on in the Gemara. What is different about Og that Moshe Rabbeinu became fear-struck? And when it comes to Sichon, we don't have no reference of Moshe Rabbeinu being ever in fear and just went into battle with confidence and defeated Sichon. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Yochoi. Mitshuvosei shel oisa tzadik ata yodea mahoya belibo. From the fact that the Kodesh Baruch Hu had to answer Moshe Rabbeinu telling him, "Do not fear," we can understand what was in Moshe Rabbeinu's heart. What caused fear? Omar, Moshe Rabbeinu figured, Shemo tamod lo yizchus shel Avram Avinu. Maybe the merit that Og has, which he earned in the context of Avram Avinu, where the pasuk says, Shenema vayovo ha-polit vayaged la-Avram ho-ivri, the polit is came and told Avram that his nephew Loit had been captured in the battle of the four kings against the five kings in Parshas Lech Lecha. So the polit informed Avram of Loit's capture, and Avram thereby went into action, saving Loit. The Amar of Yochanan, who was the polit? The polit literally is the escapee or the refugee. Who is that? Ze Oig. That in fact was Oig, this very same Oig that confronted Moshe Rabbeinu, Shepolat Midor HaMabel. He was a refugee, he was someone who escaped the destruction wrought by the great flood in the time of Noach. This Oig, you can see, was many hundreds of years old, having been around at the time of Noach and the flood, living until Moshe Rabbeinu, which we know from Noach to Avram, there were 10 generations, and each one of those generations, by the way, the people lived quite a long time. And from Moshe Rabbeinu, from Avram to Moshe Rabbeinu, was another 6 generations. And Moshe Rabbeinu now is confronting Oig, who had the merit of saving Loit from captivity by activating Avram. He wasn't involved in the war per se, that is Og, but he got Avram interested, and thereby saving Lot, and that is what Moshe Rabbeinu was fear-struck, that maybe he, Og, has merit, and it's the merit that he has that worries me that maybe I won't be successful in battle against him. So as we said before, what exactly is the connection between this story and the discussion concerning Lashon Hara is something that is dealt with by the commentaries. We continue in the Gemara. Before we do such, though, we take a look at the comment we have on the side, our Nosei Mivne heading. A diamond appears, and we have written, Sidra Shel Dvorim She Ne'evdu, a series of cases of things that got lost. What are the things that got lost? Beged She'ovad Bo Kesem, a garment where there was a stain in the garment, but the stain is not, it's not clear where it is, it's lost in the garment. And our interest is in being mevatel the stain, in canceling it, so as to remove any source of tuma from this. The second diamond will feature a case of beged she'ovad bo shichvas zera, a garment that has semen that got absorbed into it, and we just don't know where it is. And again, we want to remove that from the garment. What should we do? So far we want to get rid of the tumah that the kesem would generate, and the tumah that the shichvazer would generate. And a third case, it's not tumah related, but it is related to this concept of something getting lost, and that's a beged she'avad bo kilayim, a garment made of, let us say, made of wool and a linen thread. The combination of wool and linen is what we call shatnez, or the Torah refers to it by the term, also by the term kilayim, a mixture of, in this case, of fabrics, which is forbidden. And we want to know, what do we do in the case or in the event that we have a different fabric mixed in, wool linen mixture, and I want to identify where the mixture of materials is in the garment. So we continue now in the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, beged she'avad bo kesem, a garment that a blood stain got lost in, that I can't find where it is to focus my efforts on. So ma'avir lo shiva samimonim u'mevatlo, I expose the garment, I literally pass over it, or soak it in seven substances, and these will be featured later in our learning what the seven are, and by doing that, that cancels the blood. The Rashi says, toward the end, is Mavir Olav Zayin Samun Ala Beged, you expose the Beged to these seven substances, Umevatlo Ladam, that voids or cancels the blood. Behind the noka hach brisa hocha, the presence of this Tanaic source over here, mishum the iri liel be golem she'avda behen tuma the enya du makoma, just as we spoke before about the heaps in which the corpse flesh was lost and we didn't know where it is. So too here we have a kesem, a source of needle blood that we lost in the garment and we don't know where it is. So the method of getting rid of it, of neutralizing it, is by exposing the garment to these seven substances. Rabbi Shimon Lazar Omer, Bodko Shchunos Shchunos. He says that every shchuna, you must check it out. We will be taught shortly that a shchuna, and Rashi reveals it already, that a shchuna is an area of 3 by 3 fingers, three finger breadths, so that you have to check the garment out in very small spots in search of the kesem. Avda lo, another diamond, is a new case. If avda lo shichva zera, a spot of semen was lost in a particular garment. Chodosh, if it's a new garment, bodko b'machad, in a new garment, so it's still tightly woven, it hasn't been stretched and flexed, so that the next point of shochet bodke b'chamo, a worn out garment, that you expose that to light, the light test will reveal where it's a worn garment, where the shichva zera is, because where the semen was deposited or was absorbed, so the light won't pass through the same way as it would in the other parts of the garment. However, chodosh bodko v'machat means you do a needle check to it, and where the garment is harder, that's where the shichva zera has encrusted and prevent the needle from going through the garment. However, if it's a worn out garment, you can expose it to the light test, holding it up to the sun, which is bodko b'chama, and that will reveal where the shichvas zera is. because at that point, as we said, the light won't go through. Tana, ein shchuna p'chusa mishlosh etzbos. Regarding the lost kesem, we saw the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Elozer of checking it out, shchuna. So here the source tells us what we quoted before from Rashi, and Rashi obviously got it from here, that a shchuna is an area of 3x3 fingers. So you have to do a careful, focused checking according to that approach. Tanu Rabbanan, beged she'ovad bo kilayim, a garment in which a kilayim mixed fabric was lost. In other words, you know that in some part of the garment there is, we'll say, linen threads that are woven into the woolen garment, but I don't know where at what point that is. I am not to sell such a garment to a Gentile, nor are you allowed to make it as a blanket for a donkey, a type of saddle blanket. The reason not to sell it to the Gentile is because if you sell the kilayim beged to the Gentile, he may turn around and sell it to an unsuspecting Jew, and not to make it as a mardas for the chamor either, because there would be a problem of sitting on kilayim. Aval oise mimenu tachrichin lemeis, but one is able to use it for making shrouds for the deceased. Omar Rav Yosef, Zosomeres, Rav Yosef says, from this point of making it into shrouds for the deceased, we can assume mitzvos betelos l'osid lavo, that there is no obligation of mitzvah performance in the future. There's quite a lively discussion in the commentaries as to what exactly this is referring to, what time period this is referring to. So as not to get involved with anything that's controversial, so to speak, we'll leave it as simplistic or superficial as we can for right now, and that is that by the fact that we're dressing the deceased in something that the living would not be allowed to wear, so we see that when it comes to the future, whether it be a reference to the dead himself or possibly the time of resurrection, the mitzvos are not going to be binding. As I said, that is there's a lively discussion about this, and we don't want to commit ourselves to any particular explanation at this point. Amar le Abaye v'itemo Rav Dimi. So Abaye, some say Rav Dimi asks, v'ha'omer Rav Imoni, om Rav Yanai, lo shonu olo l'safdoi. This teaching about using the kilayim, the shatnes for shrouds, that's only for the time that he is being eulogized. Avalakovro Usr. But to bury him in there, to bury him with the shrouds made of kilayim, would be prohibited. Amale, so Rav Yosef responds, La itmar alom Rav Yochanan afilu l'kovro. Was it not said by Rav Yochanan that even to bury him in the kilayim would be acceptable? Rav Yochanan l'tame. Rav Yochanan, in saying that, is consistent with his position. The Omar Rav Yochanan, my dichti b'meisim chafshi. What is meant by the pasuk that says that in the dead there is freedom? Kevon shemeis odom. Once a person dies, nase chafshi min ha-mitzvos. He is free from mitzvos. So according to the one of the pshatim we alluded to before, is that when Rav Yosef said mitzvos v'tehels lasid lavo, one of the pshatim that I saw in the Meforshim is just like Rav Yochanan says over here, that lasid lavo is a point in time regarding the dead himself, that the dead himself is free from mitzvah performance, and hence he can be buried in something that the living would not be allowed to wear. Omar Rafram Bar Popo, Omar Rav Chisda, Beged Shava Bo Kilayim. This is a reference to what we saw before in the source and the issue of trying to find it, the Kilayim. He says, Tsoivoi Umutur. All you have to do is dye the garment, and that will make it Mutur. Now, this needs a little more explanation. Rashi explains that by dyeing it, the garment that has mixed materials, the point at which there is the mixture of materials, the dye won't take hold in a uniform fashion, by virtue of the fact that linen is a harder material, less absorbent material than wool. So you'll see that the dye takes hold there differently than the surrounding area, and if nothing is found, if there seems to be uniformity in the dyeing throughout the whole beged, so then you can assume that whatever mixed fabric that had been there, it fell away. Now this we can see by looking at the Rashi, Tsoivoy Umutar, Sha'ayideat Seva Hu Nikr, Kidimaforish, is by through the dyeing it will become obvious, as will be explained by the Gemara itself. Amro v'kisna, Rashi tells you the Gemara that we'll see in a few lines. Amro v'kisna, Amro is wool, kisna is linen. Lo shalit b'hu tseva ki hadodi. The dye does not take hold in a uniform fashion, in an equal fashion. Sha'pishton kosha l'kabel tseva yosim min atzemer. The pishton, the flax, or the linen, is a harder material, and as a result, it doesn't absorb the dye as quickly or as complete as it does in the case of wool. The e lo minkar betseva, and if there is nothing recognizable through the dyeing, and there is no oddity is recognized in the dyeing, vaday nofal, so it definitely the linen definitely fell out and is no longer present. Now we turn back to the Gemara. Omar lei rovo lerafrom bar popo. Rava asks Rafram, Mino le l'sabah. L'sabah literally is an older man, but he's turning to Rafram, who had quoted Rav Chisda, and asks Rafram, well, where does Rav Chisda, the elder sage, where does he know that from? Where did he get that technique from? What's it based on? So we have an answer, and it lasts a few lines. We have a long answer marking here. Amar le, so Rafram answers Rava. Masnisan he, it's a Tanaic source, Disnan. We saw this in our Mishnah. It said regarding the heaps, Bodek ad Shemagia Lisela. We saw the position of the Chachomim that said that checking is done until you get to bedrock. And we have a little star that we put into the side of the Gemara, to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You notice a star indicating to go back to Omid Aleph, and you'll see where this quote comes from. So the Mishnah has said regarding the checking in the heaps, you check until you get to bedrock. The e leko, and if there is no, you don't find any corpse meat, amar urev notla. So we'll suspect that a bird found it and carried it away. Hochi nami, so too here with regarding the kilayim garment, amra v'kisna b'hadodi lo soliklu tziva, a mixture of amra of wool and kisna of flax or linen. When they're mixed together, the dye does not take hold in a uniform or even fashion. The kevan de liadia, and if you have a garment where it's not noticeable, where there's lack of uniformity, amar minsa nosar, we will simply say that the foreign strands fell away. Omar Rav Acho Bre de Rav Yevo Mishmei de Morzutra. Hai man de rumi chuto de kisna beglime de amra. If a person had placed, had inserted chuto de kisna, or strands of linen, beglime is a type of garment, beglime de amra, in his woolen glima, venaske velo yoda I nosik I lo nosik, and naske is it was then ripped away, and he doesn't know whether the linen threads were ripped out. Shapir domi, it's okay. In other words, what we have here is a case where there had been an insertion of the linen thread. Let us mention here that it's very important to mention that this is not a case of a garment which was woven together from beginning to end with a mixed material, but rather you had a completed woolen garment, and into this completed woolen garment there was inserted a linen thread. As things unfolded, the thread, a thread had been yanked out, that's naske, and he just isn't sure whether the linen thread was yanked out. So Marzutra says that it's okay, he can wear the garment, he can wear the woolen glima. My taima, why is he allowed to do this? The answer is midoraisa shatnez ksiv. From the Torah perspective, the term shatnez is used. And the term shatnez is really a combination of three words combined into one word, representing three different procedures in the manufacture of material. Ad shiye shua tavoi venuz. When is something forbidden on a Torah level? When all three procedures took place, having the wool together with the linen. Shua is a, Rashi explains, is where the linen and the wool strands were combed together. They were smoothed out together. Tavui is spun together. Nuz is woven together. V'rabbonan hu de gazrube. And the Rabbonan imposed a stringency that even if you have a mixture of materials where they weren't actually all, where all three stages took place, but like we said before, you had a completed woolen garment, 100% wool, and a linen thread was inserted. So they said, the Rabbanan say that is also prohibited. The Kevan de Loyoda inaske and or intake, if and since you don't know whether the linen thread has been removed, so sorry, we would call this a suffik derabbanan. This is a doubt concerning a rabbinic matter, and as a result of that, we can afford to be lenient. Maskif lo Ravashi. Ravashi asks, who says that the shatnez word indicates all three procedures being done together, and only then would there be a prohibition on a Torah level? Amar, I want to suggest an alternative. Oy shua, oy tavi, oy nuz. That each procedure, even if done by itself, would already create a Torah level prohibition, namely if it was combed together or woven or spun together or woven together, so that if I in effect weave in one linen thread to a woolen garment, that would be a Torah prohibition. The Gemara goes on to say, the Hilchasok Marzutra, the Gemara prefers Marzutra's approach, that if it's, you don't have all three procedures done when the two materials are together, the two substances are together, it's not Torah level. Why? Midafkinu Rachmona Bechada Lishna. From the fact that the Torah, in describing shatnez, it uses one word. So the fact that three procedures are referred to by one word, it would indicate to us that all three procedures have to be together, like they are in one word, and only then do you have a Torah-level prohibition. Tonu Rabbonan, Beged Sovua Metame Mishum Kesem. The source tells us that a dyed garment can become Tomei, as a result of a nida blood stain, as a blood from a tome blood stain will make the garment tome as kes, as tome through kesem. Rabbi Noson bar Yosef Omer eno metame mishum kesem. A colored garment does not receive kesem status. Shelo tiknu bigdei tzivonin leisha elo lahokel al kismehen. The translation of this line is that they didn't rule concerning colored garments for women other than for the purpose of being lenient. The Gemara asks, Tiknu, what's the ruling? In other words, what's the rabbinic ruling here? My takninu, what takona did they make? Elo, rather, the more accurate presentation is Shelo Hutru Bigdei Tzivonin Lisha Elo Lahokel Al Kismayam. The more accurate reading is that colored garments were not made permissible for women other than for the purpose of enabling them to be lenient with regard to blood stains. In other words, a blood stain on a colored garment we will not recognize as a blood stain. Halachically, that is, we won't consider it a blood stain, and the woman and the garment will be remain tahorim. So the Gemara here asks on this word hutru, means something was allowed, was permitted. Hutru mechlal de asiri, is there some type of basis for assuming a prior prohibition? In other words, here we're seeing that there was an allowance made for colored garments when an allowance implies that at some earlier point they had been prohibited. So the Gemara says, there was a point in time in which colored garments were prohibited. This non, it says in the following Tanaic source, the Pumus Chas Bisianus. The Pumus is a military force of Aspasianus. He was the destroyer of the Beis Hamikdash. So that at the time of the temple destruction, Gozru al Atoros Chasanin Valo Irus, there was a ruling against the crowns or the wreaths made for grooms in the when getting married, and Irus is a type of musical instrument that, as a sign of mourning, there were things that were instituted to be avoided, so as to reduce joy levels. And this source tells us Atoros, Chasanim, and Irus were amongst those things that were ruled to avoid. Bikshu Ligzor al Bigdei Tzivoinin. There was an attempt to rule also against wearing colored garments. Amri, so they said, Ha Adifa, better that we shouldn't rule or prohibit colored garments. Leave it things as they are. Kedei Lahokel al Kisman, so that we can give an opportunity for women to avoid tumah as a result of a blood stain. So that the Gemara's maskoni here is that colored garments, if a blood stain does develop on a colored garment, the woman is not going to be declared tamea, and the garment is not going to be tame as a result of kesem, as a result of blood stain. In our previous sukya, if you want to be more accurate, we spoke at the very bottom of Omen Aleph concerning a beged that a kesem got lost, and we said in order to mevatel the kesem, in order to void the kesem and achieve taro, so it has to be exposed to seven samonim, seven substances. The mission here makes reference to those substances. Shiva Samonim Avirim al Hakesem. The seven substances, one is to pass over a blood stain. Rok Tofel. This is saliva that is will be explained by the Gemara. This is saliva in a person's mouth in the morning before he has eaten anything. Mei Grisin. This is explained later in the Gemara. Mei Raglaim is urine. The Neser is a certain type of mineral substance. Uboris, another substance. The Kamunya and the Ashlag. Those are seven substances. The Mishnah goes on to say, we're here at the top of Samach Beis Omer Aleph. Hitbilu v'osa al gabov taharos. If the garment was immersed before these substances were passed over the stain, hevir olav shiva samonim velo ovar. If he passed over it the seven substances and the dye or the stain did not go away, hare ze tseva, that is a sign that it's not a blood stain, but it rather is a some other red dye, but it has nothing to do with the woman. Hatarois tahoros v'eino tzorach lahatpil. The taros that she may have handled, are tahor, and you don't have to immerse the garment because there is no tuma in the first place. Ovar o shediha, if after passing the substances over it, the intensity dulled, diha is dulled, or ovar is it passed away, it got removed altogether, hare ze kesem, then it's a sign that the stain is a blood stain, bataros tameos, and the taros that she had been handling, that's the food, the truma, the kochim that she had been handling, are now rendered tame, because we now see that garment that she was wearing really was a blood stain. Vitzorach lahatpil, and it would be necessary to immerse the garment in order to metahir it. Ezo roik tofel, what is meant by saliva that's tofel? Kol shelo toam klum, is saliva that comes from a person who had not tasted, not eaten anything. Me grisen, what is that? That's leisas grisen shel pul chalukas nefesh. That's grisen is a type of vegetation that one chews. And Rashi says leisas grisen shel pul chalukas nefesh shenechla ka'oichel min aklipa, where the bean itself was removed from its peel or its covering. Lo asa, so it's chewed, legrisas apul umaviro al hakesim, and then that is used to put onto the stain as well as one of the seven substances. Me raglayim, what is the reference to urine? Shehichmitsu, urine that was set aside to ferment. Vitzorach lekaskes sholosh pomim lechol echad ve'echad, and there's a rubbing action three times, three rubbings for each substance that's placed on it. We have seven substances. Upon the placing of each one of the substances on the stain, there is a series of three rubbings. Heviron shalok is sidron, if the substances were placed on the stain out of order. Our Mishnah listed the seven substances in a specific order. If one did it out of order, o shevir shiva, someone tachas, or he placed them all seven at one time, lo osav alaklum, that he has not accomplished anything. In other words, that does not establish anything as far as our goal is concerned, to establish whether it's a blood stain or not. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.